and welcome to Real Career Talk, a monthly podcast series brought to you by the network BICP, where we come together to have real career-based conversations with internal AT&T and external leaders in a variety of fields who share their career stories and give some real holistic career advice. I am your host, Andrea Lim. And for this episode, we are going to talk about how to speak up to advance your career. And with me today is someone who can effectively speak on this theme, Mr. Scott Harvey, a highly sought after speaker, coach, business communications consultant who has helped many of people with their building their confidence. He is an FBI-trained hostage negotiator and public information officer for 20 years. Scott built his career on his ability to communicate through any crisis. Since launching Speaking of Harvey, Inc. in 2010, he has had the opportunity to speak and train for organizations from Kentucky to Indonesia, and we are especially thrilled he is with us today. He is the host of his own podcast, the Speaking of Harvey podcast, and I encourage all who watch and listen to this to check it out. He is passionate about helping others build the skills and confidence to move off the sidelines and lead the conversations, and especially passionate about helping teams to learn how to navigate in an online world, which I think is incredibly important, to prevent tragedies before they happen, something he became deeply involved in his years as a DRE officer. And I believe DRE stands for, correct me if I'm wrong, Scott, Drug Abuse Resistance Education. I
think that's correct. You nailed it.
He lives in Central Kentucky with his beautiful wife of 25 plus years. And yes, I am going to ask you a question about that. Mm-hmm. And his two beautiful daughters. Scott, thank you so much for being with me today. I really appreciate you carving out the time.
I'm super excited about this conversation, Andrea. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, definitely. So, okay, I'm going to get into this with a couple of softball questions. So, First of all, I would love to know what's one guilty pleasure, like one thing you absolutely cannot live without?
Wow. For me in Kentucky, probably, especially this time of year, it's probably going to be sweet tea. Like it is when I go north of Kentucky, like people take sugar out of tea and I don't understand it. Like sugar should be in tea. And so I'm a sweet tea fan. I can't go as sweet as some people will, but if you just want unsweet tea, it's brown water. So I'm not in for that. I got to have sugar in my tea. So that's my guilty pleasure, especially as the temperatures warm up.
Oh my goodness. I love that. Well, I'm from the South, originally from Atlanta, live in California, and I completely agree with you. I don't know why anyone would drink tea without sugar in it. Huge peach sweet tea fan.
You got to be from Georgia. Yes, got to be.
Absolutely. All right. So now I share just only a little bit, like a tiny snippet about you, but I want you to share something about you few people know. Like, tell me something that I can't find if I Google you, because you're Googleable, but tell me something I will not find if I Google you.
So probably the thing that was pre-Google, I'm showing my age, but it happened pre-Google, was I was actually a college cheerleader. I cheered collegiately for 3 of my 4 years in college. I didn't do it my senior year because I was engaged, planning a wedding, trying to graduate, get all the things done. And that was a plate that I just stopped spinning. But I cheered for 3 years in college, loved it. It was how I got to meet people and do some cool things. So in the pre-Google days, that's kind of what I was before I got into law enforcement and out of college.
Oh my God, that is so incredibly fascinating. This is a wonderful segue, quite frankly, into the theme about speaking up to advance your career. So I am incredibly fascinated to understand, how did you find your career path? Like, was there some significant defining moment that led you on this path? You know, because you were, you know, in the FBI managing something that I can't even wrap my head around with, you know, hostage negotiations. So tell me that story just a little bit about how you got onto that career path, which led you to where you are today, helping people speak with confidence.
Yeah. So I always wanted to be in law enforcement ever since I was a kid. That was just something that I felt like I could do and do well. And so I went to college for that. You're not required to get a college degree to be in law enforcement, but you can't be a police officer till you're 21. You graduate high school at 18. You might as well go to college and get a degree. So that's what I did. And I went into local law enforcement. Now, I did all of my training through the FBI. My hostage negotiator training all came through the FBI, but I worked for a city police agency.
Okay.
So I want to be clear on that because my FBI friends would be like, Scott, you weren't an agent. I'm like, I know, but we trained together. So you know, that's what I tell people. I get it. So, but in law enforcement, I was in law enforcement for about 2 to 3 years before I realized it's very much a cleanup business. Mm. Like people call the police when they've had a horrible day, when things are not going well, when they've had a crash. And I got tired of cleaning up because you can't ever put things back to where they were after a tragedy. And so it didn't take me long in my career to get prevention focused. And that looked like getting trained as a hostage negotiator because I believe no matter how far you've gone down the wrong road, it's never too late to turn around. And so I wanted to help these people who found themselves in a crisis, stop making poor decisions, start making better decisions that would help things come out better and to protect my fellow officers, protect any hostages they may have and to protect them. So I got into hostage negotiation very quickly. I also became a public information officer where I was talking to the media. I got trained in DARE, which we already talked about. So I was in the schools teaching kids how to make better choices. And I realized very quickly, everything I was doing was communication focused.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of communication. Maybe that came back to how I was raised. I was the middle of three boys. Mm-hmm. So I was the peacekeeper. I was the negotiator. Neither one of my brothers have ever been wrong about anything. And so I was the kind of kid that let things roll. You know, we just don't get worked up about stuff. So that was kind of wired in me. And I just found that I was pretty good at communicating. And so in the law enforcement world, I signed up for a 20-year hazardous duty retirement. It's 25 now. But when I became a police officer at 23, I knew at 43, I could retire. Didn't have to, but that was the first time I was eligible.
Okay.
So I also knew the pension was going to be great, but it wasn't going to be enough to support a family, right? Sure. It's a good safety net. It's not a good career path. So around 2010, I realized I could speak professionally for a living. I had spoken already at a conference because I knew the conference organizer. I was already attending that conference. She called me like a month ahead of time. She goes, one of my breakout speakers backed out. Could you cover anything? I'm like, well, I could talk about bullying. I had been researching that for DARE. So that's what I did. Those people in that session were like, hey, would you come train our staff? Because these were principals and school administrators.
Absolutely.
Sure, I'll come train your staff. The staff was like, hey, that was amazing. Could you train our students? And I'm like, well, you'd have to pay for my gas. Like, I don't know how this works, right? I didn't realize this was a career. Yeah. I didn't realize professional speaking was a thing until I started doing it. And then I realized when I started doing it and loving it that I had about 8 years left until I could retire. So this became the side hustle. This became the side gig. Speaking professionally for the last 8 years, taking vacation time from the police department until 2018 rolled around. And then I had brought that boat close enough to the dock, the speaking career, that I could step into it. And so I was running to something instead of running from something. I still am appreciative of all my days at the police department, but I love what I do now better. I do miss the DARE classroom. I miss establishing months-long friendships with these students and mentoring them and that kind of stuff. But it set me up for this career. And I love what I do today, speaking on stages, you know, all over the place and coaching people and just helping people communicate more effectively. And that's why I wrote the book. Because not everybody can hear me speak. I'm only one person.
Right.
But everybody can get the information in the book.
Yeah. So speaking of the book, you know, you clearly had the intention of this to be some sort of guide, because as you just mentioned, you're not able to be everywhere. People can Google you or, you know, from 6 degrees of separation, which is how I found you. You know, you see your topics about how silence kills. And, you know, you talk about different tactics that people can use. So I want to know, you know, what was it about being silent that gave you that inspiration to write the book? And how did you come up with the title? Because especially how relevant it is today. you know, when you wrote it, no doubt it was relevant. I'm just trying to get into your mindset of what were those, you know, things that shaped that experience to lead you to write that book.
So as a public information officer for the police department, I was handling media releases. I was doing media interviews. I was doing this stuff every day, right? And I realized very quickly that if we choose not to comment, we don't kill the story, right? We just lose control of the story. So the media and, you know, your organization, if there's a story, it's going to be covered. You just have to decide if you want to be a part of that coverage or not. Right. Because if you decide to opt out, they will go and get the story from people who don't have all the information, and you'll lose complete control of it. And so when I realized that in law enforcement, we were in front of everything. We were releasing all the time. We were feeding the media. We had a very good working relationship with them, so that when we did make a mistake, because we're human, right, we owned up to it. And they accepted that from us. They covered the story, but it ended there because they trusted us. We had this level of trust. And so as I was getting ready to retire and started looking more towards corporate America, I realized they've not learned this lesson yet. Because in corporate America, when there's a crisis, they're the king and queen of no comment, right? That's what they say. And to me, if I'm a customer or an employee, if I know something is going on and nobody's talking about it, my brain will start filling in the narrative. Mm-hmm. And my brain will be way more creative than what the actual problem is.
Right.
And so when you are silent with me, that kills relationships. Mm-hmm. That kills trust. That can kill an organization. Mm-hmm. Through COVID, the organizations who weren't communicating what they were doing during COVID are not open today. The ones who were saying things like, we are cleaning, we are sanitizing, we are doing this, this is a terrible time, but we're going to get through it, they're still open today. Right. Because they communicated their way through a crisis.
Right.
And if I'm just a line employee, you know, I don't have any supervisory capabilities, I'm wanting to know what's going on. Keep me in the loop. Even if it's an HR issue, and I hear this all the time from people, Andre, they're like, well, what if we can't talk about stuff? And I would tell them, I don't know that there's a time where you can't say anything. Now, that's what the lawyers will tell us. They will say, don't say anything about this.
Right.
You can say, we realize there's some turmoil. We're aware of it. We're working on it because we want this to be the best place to work ever.
Right.
And that tells the employees, like, they're not going to talk about my stuff in front of everybody if I'm the one that messes up. But at least I know they're aware, they're concentrating on it, and I can get back to work.
Yeah.
So you've not admitted what the problem was or who it is, but you've just reassured people that you're aware of it and you're not being silent.
Yeah. Putting that up under the bridge about, you know, how to advance your career, you know, let's dive a little bit into, you know, in your opinion, what do you feel are some of the barriers of why people who are in non-leadership positions, right? Mm-hmm. Why do they stay silent? Like, what are some of those limitations that we kind of put on ourselves? And that can be career limiting.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was a supervisor at the police department. I was a sergeant, had several officers that I was responsible for. And as much as I don't want to, I liken it to being a parent, right? When we were on a road trip with my kids, if I don't hear anything from the back seat, I assume everybody's good. But like, if you say, you know, Dad, I've had to go to the bathroom for the last 2 hours. I'm like, well, you should have said something. Like, we'll pull over. It's not a big deal, right? Just let me know.
Right.
But I think from a workplace scenario, if I don't hear anything from the people that are on my team, I assume everybody's good. I want everybody to be good. And so I just assume they are. If you're not, like, let me know. I supervised school resource officers as part of my job. And one of my school resource officers let me know pretty early on after a few years of in that position. He's like, I really feel like I want to be a detective.
Yeah.
Like, okay, cool. He was an amazing school resource officer. I didn't want to lose him, but I also want him to be happy fulfilling his purpose. So every year when I signed him up for training, I made sure that it was investigator focused, even though he was still a school resource officer, because he investigated things as a school resource officer. And that was helpful for me, his supervisor. But when a position came up in the detective bureau, he already had the training and the experience, and he became a detective. He's still a detective today, and he's great at that too. He wasn't great as a school resource officer because that's what he was. He was a great person, right? Yes. And great people are successful wherever we put them. So I think if I'm not a supervisor and I feel like I'm not being used to my best of my abilities, the most loving thing I can do, the nicest thing I can do to my supervisor is just talk to him about it. Yeah. Not in front of a group, right? Not don't become the person in front of the whole group, but just schedule, hey, do you have 5 minutes to talk?
Yeah.
And just let them know what you feel like you could be doing to help. Because that's, as a supervisor, that's what I want to know. How are you going to best help the team? And if your strengths aren't being adequately used where you are, let's figure out where they can be adequately used. And if that's not on my team, I'll be sad. But what's best for the whole organization is every person functioning in their strength where they're placed, if that makes sense.
No, it totally does. Because I have to say, it's interesting. Most recently, there was a survey that was done among all employees at AT&T. And an area of opportunity to improve is, being more understanding and empathetic and, just recognizing that people are going through a lot of things. And so it can be difficult for some people to speak up, because even when we were reviewing the survey, as my small team that I work within, there were some people who were vocal and there were plenty of people who were not vocal. And I can see how frustrating it can be for our leaders to say, well, I don't know what I don't know.
Yes.
I need you to tell me. And so I think you just gave some great advice, like maybe take one-on-one if you're not wanting to speak in a big, big open group. But this takes me to, this thought, because maybe some people, have heard that proverbial saying, silence is golden, right?
Right.
Is there power in silence? Like, are there situations you could think of when it's not appropriate to speak up in the workplace, especially as it relates to advancing your career? Like if a company is going through a lot of downsizing, do you speak up then? Or let's talk about that a little bit.
I think it can be tricky. I mean, there are times where, like, if you've said what you need to say, I'm not a huge fan of repeating it. I don't feel like the squeaky wheel. I'm not one to reward the squeaky wheel. Like, duly noted, I understand what's going on. But as a supervisor, it's my job to say, I hear you. I want to make this work for you. Right now is not the time. Mm-hmm. And I may even tell them, remind me in 2 months. And then I'll throw the ball back to them. Remind me in 2 months. The problem with silence is, one of the things I say in the book is, silence without rapport feels like we don't care. Oh. Every time, right? So rapport is the secret sauce here. It just depends on what your team dynamics are. If you are in a close-knit team where, like, I know you and your family, I know what your kids are into, like that's the kind of vibe we have here, then I would say speak your mind appropriately. If you were in a team where we come in, we just do the work and nobody talks to anybody, I'd just be real careful there. And that's a leadership issue, which is not necessarily your issue if you're not a leader. So I feel like we in the Western world, so to speak, want to compartmentalize. We want to have like work life and home life and spiritual life and all these different boxes. And our Eastern friends have already figured out it's all life, right? It's all the same. If things aren't good at home, things aren't going to be good at work. So I'm a type of leader who kind of wants to know what you're comfortable with, how things are. What'd you do this weekend? What was fun thing that happened? How's your kids doing? Those are the type of conversations that I like to have, because in the business world, people will do business with people they like, know, and trust.
True.
The best way to establish that is to connect with your people. As a hostage negotiator, my number one job was to build rapport. Like, I had to have the person talking to me and I had to find out what was going on. Not today. Like, what started 6 months ago, 6 years ago, that got us to today?
Wow.
What do you value? What's important to you? What's a trigger for you? What sets you off? Those were all things that I needed to know so that I could craft a resolution to this standoff that allows you to check as many positive boxes as possible.
Yeah.
I need to show you a way out of this that allows your values to be seen and felt by you. Like, you feel like this is something that aligns with your values. As a leader in an organization, if I need to make corrective action or I need to deal with a problem, I need to check as many of your positive boxes as I can. And that may be like, I really want you to be successful here. I know that's important to you. I know you have aspirations of doing this and this. In order to get you there, we got to deal with this, right? Yeah. This thing here today will make you more successful if we iron this out.
Yeah.
But that's an uncomfortable, awkward conversation.
Yes, it is.
And we live in a world that shies away from the awkward. Not just shies away, but will actually shout down anybody.
Right.
Don't challenges. Yeah. Shout down anybody who challenges our beliefs. And that's a huge pet peeve of mine because I feel like we can't fix anything we can't openly talk about.
Right.
We have to be able to talk about it. And sometimes that looks like me as a line person, not a supervisor, speaking up appropriately with my supervisor. And sometimes as a supervisor, that involves me listening. Okay. But listening is the secret sauce to rapport, if you will. Like I tell people all the time, I've never, in negotiations, I've never talked somebody into doing something, but I have listened people into doing things. You know, finding out what's important to you, what you value, all of that stuff. Listening is the secret sauce.
Right, right. Interesting. So give me or share with us some advice, like if someone feels inferior to their coworkers or to even their boss in a situation where they have difficulty asserting themselves. So not that in any way that this is a comparison, but if someone is in a bit of a crisis, right, they may have a difficult time with really explaining, you know, their values or what they care about because they're not an assertive person, or especially in a work environment where you don't feel valued. So talk with me how or what could be one or two strategies or tips, what they could do to, you know, kind of work on that.
I think one of the biggest things we're missing in our world today is getting in the same room with people. Get in the same room as much as you can. I mean, you and I aren't in the same room, but we're doing the next best thing. We're doing this on video because here's what we know in the communication world. 7% of our message is in our words. The other 93% is in our tone and our body language.
Oh my God.
So from a communication standpoint, an email gives us about 7% of the content. If I can get in the same room with you, maybe you're an employee of mine, you're on my team, and you're telling me everything is good, right? And it's great. And we're all happy. And then I get in the same room with you and your nonverbals are communicating a different message to me.
Right.
Or if we work remotely, I get on a video chat with you and your nonverbals, you know, I say, how are things going? And you're like, they're good. I mean, they're good. Obviously, they're not, right?
Right.
And so the truth is always in our nonverbals. It's harder to fake nonverbals than it is to fake words. So get in the same room, read the nonverbals. If I feel like there's hesitancy on your part, I'm like, you don't sound convinced by that, is what I'm going to say. And they'll say, well, yeah, I got some stuff at home, but it really doesn't affect work, but it does.
Yeah.
I'm happy to help you. We have EAPs. We have employee assistance programs that are anonymous. We have things that will help the rest of your life. Because to me, the rest of your life is more important than what you do for me day in and day out on this team, right? And here's the kickback. If I can get them, if I can help fix the rest of their life, they'll feel valued. They'll feel like I care and they'll want to work with me.
Absolutely.
Right? Now, the catch is this can be manipulative, right? Communication is a tool that can be used for good or evil. If that's in the back of my mind, like, how do I get them to like me better? Then that's they're going to see through that. Yeah. How can I genuinely help them? What can I do to best serve them? That's who we want to work for and with, right? When we have a servant's mentality, that's who we want on our team.
That is a message that needs to be echoed and amplified like a lot, because I think the word servant leader is getting a lot of great traction today, but it was not the mentality that a lot of people had. And so then a lot of leadership styles, when they hear servant, they feel in some way that diminishes their influence or it diminishes their power, when in fact it has the complete opposite effect on people.
Right.
Because you touched upon, I think it was the study that was done in the 60s where it was really controversial about the body language and your tone of voice having mm-hmm. more power and influence than the actual words themselves. So it's very interesting that you say that, but I think I'd like to just ask a question. So say, for instance, in a scenario, you want to change careers mm-hmm. or you're looking for other employment or you want a promotion and it's within your own company. Your supervisor mm-hmm. finds out about it, but not directly from you. And right. the first question they ask you is, why do you want to change your role? Or why do you want to leave? Why do you want to find another opportunity? How best should someone answer that? Because it could be you can answer it any number of ways. Right. So give us some strategies of how we don't make that awkward.
So it awkward is a fear of everybody today. Like my daughters are 22 and 18. The conversations I've had with them about awkward, like everything is awkward to teenagers today. Everything is scary and awkward. And I get that. But if we push through the awkward, that's the only way we'll get to the awesome, right? When we bump mm-hmm. against awkward, if we pull away, we'll never get to awesome. I believe firmly that awesome lives on the other side of awkward. So if you're going to have a conversation with somebody, put that out in the beginning. Say, mm-hmm. this is going to be awkward and weird, but I need to talk about this. So if my supervisor comes to me and says, you know, why are you looking to leave? I say, man, I appreciate you coming to me about this. I love what I'm doing today, right? This is a great job. I'm really thankful for the opportunities you've given me, but I feel like I could be challenged more if I did this thing. Now I'll do this job to the best of my abilities. I'm not looking to not perform here, because sometimes when we get frustrated about our skills aren't being used or whatever, it tends to have us let off the gas in our sure. current job.
Sure.
Nobody's going to hire somebody who has let off the gas, right? We need people right. who are going to be out there doing the best of their abilities, even though they feel like today is not the best seat on the bus for them. Like we need mm-hmm. people in the right seats to make the bus the most productive thing it can be. So if I don't feel like I'm in the best seat, I mean, I'm just going to say something about how thankful I am to be on the bus, going in the same direction that everybody's going. But I feel like I might be more helpful if I came here. And then I would throw it back to my supervisor and say, am I wrong? Am I not seeing this the way you're seeing it? You know, let me know, because I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to feel that I'm not being used appropriately, but maybe they haven't seen those skills in me.
Right, right.
If I'm not showing them the skills that they need to see to promote me or to transfer me, that's on me.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
It's really easy for me to sit in my office and say, my skills aren't being utilized. But if nobody sees those skills because I'm not putting them on display,
right.
then of course they're not going to be utilized. So
right, right.
I'm a huge fan of calling out awkward in the beginning and just saying, you know what, this is going to be awkward, but I just want to have this conversation. And when somebody comes to me with a confrontational statement, like, why do you want to leave or something? I'm going to start with, I'm so glad you brought this up. Mm. No. And just be thankful that you're now have the green light to have the conversation that maybe you've been scared to have.
Yes.
We live in a world that likes to tell us what we can and can't talk about. And I'm just yes. not a fan of that. Yes. I don't feel like we get any better when we avoid topics.
Right. So, you know, building rapport for someone who is extroverted is probably something that comes natural.
Right.
Share with me one tip for someone who is not extroverted, who is more introverted, of how they could build rapport, especially if you are, say, new to an organization.
Mm-hmm. So I'm very extroverted, in case you haven't known this. Like I love people, like the pandemic was my kryptonite, like in the house, just with the family, as much as I love the family. When somebody walked by the neighborhood outside my window, I was on the front porch trying to talk to them. Like I'm like, yeah. hey, people. So I'm very extroverted. My wife is introverted, but she's also a school teacher. So she functions in an extroverted role,
yeah.
but it exhausts her. Like it makes her tired. So it's not we can't do this stuff. It's that it either gives us energy or it drains our energy.
Mm-hmm.
So I leave an event speaking to thousands of people on a stage and I am jacked, right? I'm excited. I'm pumped. My wife could do the same event and she would need to take a nap. Like she's just tired. She can do right, it. So. Right. A lot of times people want to hide behind the fact that they're an introvert and I just don't connect with people. some of my best connections and some of my best speaker friends who speak on thousands of stages, they're introverts. Mm-hmm. They function in an extroverted role, but it draws their energy. And yeah. So what the introverts need to do is say, I can do this, but I need to schedule 15 minutes afterwards with some quiet music to take a walk, to do those things. And then I dangle that carrot of recharge time on the other side of something that is going to take energy from me. Mm-hmm. I can do it. And that's the important thing for an introvert. You're very, very capable. My youngest is an introvert. Yeah. And so right now with graduation and everything that's looming, like she's tired, but I'm like, you can do hard things. And tomorrow we'll catch up from it. We'll rest. Like we won't schedule anything for tomorrow because you've got graduation party today, right? So you've got to people and people are exhausting for introverts. So schedule that time to recharge. And when you have that carrot on the other side, you can have the difficult conversations. You can stand up for yourself because your worth, your opinion adds value.
Yeah.
And in today's world, when we talk about DEI, which I'm a fan of, that includes differences in personalities and differences in opinions.
Absolutely. Right?
We have to have everything. And your opinion and your personality is an important part of this team. The extroverts like me steal the spotlight. I get that. But we're able to be successful because people like you are behind the scenes running the lights and pulling the levers and doing all the things. And we're super thankful for that. So you add value, whether you're an introvert or an extrovert.
I love that idea of letting people know to recalibrate, you know, take the time. And that alone, I think, will signal to them, I can't handle this moment because I know what's going to wait for me on the other end.
Right.
That is a wonderful, wonderful tip. So we're coming up to the end of our conversation, which totally sucks because I could talk to you now for hours. Two last questions. One is there a question under this theme? I mean, because your book is phenomenal. Silence Kills. Love that title and everyone needs to get it. I'm reading it. I told you as soon as I find my brain space. And is there one question that I should have asked you under this topic about how to not stay silent that I should have asked and how would you have answered it?
Wow, that's a good question. I think the big thing for me, and we kind of talked about it a little bit, is, you know, in the virtual world, people want to virtual their way into conversations. Like mm-hmm. we want to do what you and I are doing. And this is second best, right? The virtual world really caught on around April of 2020. Some of us were using it before then, but that's when it became popular. April of 2020, we'd spent a month with just our family. So any port in a storm, like this is amazing. We're having Zoom happy hours. We're playing Zoom games. We're doing Zoom everything. And it's amazing. But when the world opened back up again, and I started getting in the room with people, mm-hmm. I realized Zoom is so far into second place. It's not mm-hmm. even fun. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Get in the room, talk to the people, read the body language, be on the breaks, have dinner with people, have drinks with people. Get in the room because there's a synergy that just can't be captured on a video call. This is second best.
When yes.
It's, obviously, you're in California. I'm in Kentucky. This is the only way this works today.
Right, right.
But if I can come and sit down with your leadership or get in the room with your team, like, yes, we'll make that happen. I promise. Well, if I can get in the room, then it's just compound effect. And in today's world, I see 20-somethings, which I'm a huge fan of. My daughter is 20-something. That want to say, why didn't we just do this virtually? It's the same thing. It's not. It's not. But that's all you've known, to be fair. You didn't know the power of being in the room. I'm a huge mm-hmm. fan of Hamilton, the musical, and Aaron Burr always wants to be in the room where it happens. He doesn't care. He just wants to be in the room because he realizes there's power there.
Yeah.
So if you're going to communicate, get in the room as much as possible.
Love that. Love that. Okay. This is my final question. Hopefully it's not a curveball. Okay. Your book, Silence Kills. Mm-hmm. You've been 25 plus years married. Is that from staying silent or speaking up?
That's a great question. And I will tell you, in what I've learned in marriage, there are very few what I call closed-handed issues. Mm. There are very few things that I'll dig in and fight about, right? Most of them are open-handed issues. And one of the things I said in the beginning is important here. I said, silence without rapport feels like we don't care. This is why my wife and I can be on a road trip and not talk for an hour, and neither one of us is worried that the other one is mad, because we've had thousands and thousands of hours of communication to put that silence into context. So not everything needs to be said all the time. That's a key thing, but some things do.
Yeah.
And some things you need to have face-to-face conversations about, and some things you need to have shoulder-to-shoulder conversations. With our teenage girls especially, like if it was a difficult conversation, we would do it in the car. Because they don't want to make eye contact when it's awkward. They don't like, this is weird. They don't want to see the look on our face.
Yeah.
But they open up a little bit better because of that. And so there are times to be silent in a relationship and in business, and there are times to speak up. Finding those times to speak up is the challenge. Not everything is a big deal.
Oh my God, what a way to end this. Oh my goodness. I completely agree with you. Not everything is a big deal. Oh my God, Scott, I can't even count the thousands of gems and tips that you have dropped on this podcast. Thank you so much for being on this show with me today. I know the network audience is going to just gobble all of this up because you have given so many great relatable elements that we can use this in our everyday life, not just when we're thinking about our careers and where we want to go, but just in general, how to relate to people and make our lives probably smoother and easier because we will have better communication skills. So I cannot thank you enough for giving the time to be with me today.
Well, I'm appreciative of you sharing your platform with me. Thank you so much, Andrea.
Absolutely. All righty. And for everyone else who will listen to this, thank you so much. And show up every day just as you are, and speak up too.